continue now with our installment of the story of Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, how he became a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov. Rav Baruch, you will recall, is spending time with Yitzchok Shol, who is now introducing him to the highways and byways of Chassidus. Baruch, with a sensitive nature and depth of feeling, was so affected by the talks he had with Yitzchok Shol that on that particular night of Erev Pesach, he could not close his eyes. He lay there deeply contemplating all that Yitzchok Shol had said. Yitzchok Shol had tried to make Baruch feel the same Hasidic urge which he himself experienced, and of seeing everything in a joyful life. But when he, Baruch, tried to consider his own feelings with regard to his position, all he felt was a deep misery. He could not sleep at all, but tossed about for hours. When he finally fell into occasional fits of slumber, he was beset by nightmares where he seemed to be wandering about on a deserted road with no one in sight, feeling very hungry and thirsty, but no sign of any place of refuge. He groaned in his despair. Suddenly, he seemed to feel refreshing drops of rain pouring down on his tired face. He awoke with a start to find his friend Yitzchok Shol standing over him with a jug in his hand and pouring water from it over his upturned face. "What's the matter?" Yitzchok Shol asked him in concern. "I heard you tossing about, as the wall between our rooms is not very thick, and then I heard you groaning. So I thought I would come in to see if I could do anything for you. Imagine my concern when I found you had fainted over your tailim." Baruch began to cry with relief at having awakened from his terrifying nightmare, and then, trying to gain control of himself, as his sobs shook his frame, he burst out into hysterical laughter. "Come, my friend," said Yitzchok Shol, "you are overwrought. Let us get out of this stuffy atmosphere and get outside into the fresh air." He helped Baruch to get dressed, and together they went out of the house. As they walked, they could see the dawn breaking. They stopped to look in silent admiration of God's recurring wonders of nature. Silently, they continued on their way in the direction of the Beis HaMedrash, where they came in time for the first minyan. As they reached the town, the Brumsel was already astir. Although it was not a market day, the place was full of peasants, who, knowing from past years that the Jews closed their business for their Passover, had come into town to get supplies, as well as to bring items that the Jews would be needing for their holiday. After davening, something again happened which made a deep impression upon Baruch, and Yitzchok Shol thought it was an opportune moment for emphasizing again that the Hasidic way was the best way of life. And this is what had happened. As soon as the davening was over, the smith's eldest son-in-law, Rav Zalman Meir, sat at the table and began to hold forth from the tractate Yevamos for the purpose of making the siyum, the conclusion of the Masechta. He was a firstborn, and other Bechirim, other firstborn, who had come to the siyum to substitute it for fasting, as was the custom, gathered around the table to listen. Some of them were scholars, but most were just ordinary Jews. Yitzchok Shol, who was also a firstborn, intended to make his own siyum as well, but on account of his brother-in-law's scholarship, he allowed him the honor of making his siyum first. So he and Baruch also joined the group at the table to listen to Rav Zalman Meir. Rav Zalman Meir seemed to take little interest in whether his hearers could understand him or not, for without hesitation he began a scholarly discourse, with the majority not understanding a word of what he said. The Gabbai Aaron Beinish then came up to Rav Zalman Meir and very gently suggested that it would be of much greater benefit to his audience if he would explain matters in a simpler manner. This annoyed Zalman Meir very much indeed. He took this as a slight to his personal dignity and replied testily, "If the people here are so ignorant as not to be able to understand a simple matter such as this, then I'm just wasting my time, and I shall not trouble to continue at all." For the benefit of anyone who might question his justification in losing his temper, he said stiffly, when a Talmud Chochem is slighted, he has every right to show his anger, and as he felt himself to be a true scholar, it was okay for him to get angry. Saying which, he closed the Gemara and walked haughtily away from the table. All attempts to make him change his attitude were without avail, and a commotion arose among the people in the Beis HaMedrash. Meanwhile, the Rav's son-in-law, Reb Shlomi, who was also a firstborn, entered the Beis HaMedrash in order to hold his siyum. Noticing the commotion, he called the shamash and asked him what all the noise was about. When he learned what had taken place, he called out to the shamash in a voice which would reach all present. Tell the smith's son-in-law that only he who had received his diploma, his smicha, from the chief rabbi of the town can consider himself to be a Talmud Chochem, and not otherwise. He was obviously implying that as Zalman Meir had not received such a smicha, he was not entitled to regard himself as a Talmud Chochem, nor was he therefore justified in losing his temper. Reb Shlomi then took his Gemara and began to concentrate on his own siyum. The commotion now increased even more than before. The snub with which Reb Shlomi had treated Reb Zalman Meir caused the congregation to take sides. Everyone acknowledged the proven scholarship of the latter, and so Reb Shlomi's remarks created a bad impression. While the congregants were noisily arguing for or against the one or the other, the second son-in-law of the smith came forward to support the cause of his older son-in-law, brother-in-law, and called out at the top of his voice, "Once a wool comber, always a wool comber, whether he wears a cloak of the rabbinate or not." He was referring to the fact that though Reb Shlomi was now the son-in-law of the Rav, they still remembered that his father had been a humble wool comber. Reb Yitzchok Shol stood by with Baruch, and turning to him and to a few others nearby, said, "It is a well-known fact that a pot which has but a small amount of water in it makes a lot of noise when it boils up." Yitzchok Shol had wanted to draw the attention of Baruch and the others to what would develop or could develop when scholars allowed themselves to become petty and to squabble about trivialities in the mistaken belief that they were defending the honor of the Torah when really they were defending their own honor. The result of their behavior was that they were dishonoring the Torah. Yitzchok made this remark with an amused expression, and those who heard them, catching the implication of his remarks, appreciated its humor. The Rav's son-in-law, Reb Shlomi, took this remark to be a criticism directed against himself, and so he called out in a rage to the shamas, "Send these impudent sons-in-law of the smiths out of the Beis HaMedrash. Their impertinence is becoming unendurable." The shamash ignored this request, while the people looked on with interest to see what would be the outcome of all the arguments. The Rav's son-in-law is certainly in a bellicose mood. Hurling insults is not sufficient to satisfy him, but he must seek to trample his opponents underfoot, Yitzchok Shol remarked in his usual unexcitable tones. "Anyway, let him rage if he feels like it." When the commotion eventually died down, Yitzchok Shol at last took his Gemara, Masechet Chagiga, and he began his siyum on the tractate. At first, there were just a few people who paid attention to what he was saying. But as the other noticed with what concentration the audience listened, more and more gathered to hear and listened eagerly as Yitzchok Shol clearly and simply expounded the Masechet. The difference between his way and that of his eldest brother-in-law, of Zalman Meir, was too marked to be ignored. And it was very obvious indeed that Yitzchok Shol's siyum was the one which appealed best to the people in the Beis HaMedrash. The tractate Chagiga concludes with a difference of opinion between Rabbi Elazar and the sages as to whether or not the altars in the Holy Temple were subject to tefillah, whether they had to be immersed in the same way as the other vessels, about which it was said, "These vessels must be immersed in the mikveh after a yontif, because during the yontif, the pilgrims who entered the Beis HaMikdash may have brought some impurity into the place." The golden altar and the copper altar, continued Rabbi Elazar, are comparable to earth, which does not become affected by impurities. But the other sages maintained that since the altar were mitsupim, that is, covered by metal, they could be contaminated. The crux of the arguments was whether the earthly base of the altars could nullify the impurity or not. Rabbi Yitzchok Shol began to dissect the difference of opinion according to Drash, homiletically. He explained that the true Talmud Chochem is comparable in his modesty to earth. He does not mind being trampled upon, so great is his patience and forbearance. Such a Talmud Chochem certainly remains unaffected by any impurity. About that there can be no difference of opinion. Rabbi Lezer was of this same opinion, for he refers to such Talmidei Chachamim who are also great men of virtue. On the other hand, there are also Talmidei Chachamim who are to be compared with the vessels which are covered with metal. These scholars feel, perhaps in but a small degree, their own greatness. That, however, does not matter, for they are entitled to their own self-esteem to the extent that every other person is entitled to such self-esteem. But there are some whose opinion of themselves is so great that they are all puffed up with their own importance. These undoubtedly can become contaminated. On that particular Erev Pesach morning, when Rabbi Yitzchok Shol sat down to his siyum in the Beis HaMedrash, his two brothers-in-law stood by to listen to what he had to say. They expected to hear a pilpul, a hair-splitting scholarly discourse. But when instead they found themselves listening to a homily, they pulled sour faces. Rabbi Moshe Leib seemed resigned to stay and listen, but their older brother-in-law, Rabbi Zalman Meir, looked sulky. He considered it as beneath the dignity of Talmidei Chachamim to have to listen to this exposition. He made a move to walk off with his nose in the air, but something made him change his mind, and he turned back to listen to what his younger brother-in-law had to say further. Yitzchok Shol then proceeded to expound the theory of the Shlokish, that even the most uneducated Jew is as full of virtue as the pomegranate is full of seeds. He also referred to Rabbi Avua, who quoted Rabbi Lezer as saying that Talmid Chachom could not be hurt by the fire of Gehenim, to which Rish Lakish added his own contention that those Jews who, though uneducated, were yet as full of virtue as the pomegranate of seeds, also would be unhurt by the fire of Gehenim. Here, Rabbi Yitzchok Shol stopped to inquire if his listeners thought that Rish Lakish had come up with something new, and continued to assert that it all came to what he had said at the beginning, that even the humblest Jew stood on a high level and had in him the capacity and possibility of attaining an even higher level. And it was up to the scholar to help him attain that higher level, and not, as was so often the case, to remain aloof and look down on him with contempt. Rabbi Avua and Rish Lakish lived in the same period. Rish Lakish was older, though, for he was a friend of Rabbi Yochanan, while Rabbi Avua was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, a pupil of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avua, said Rabbi Yitzchok Shol, was a very modest man, despite the fact that he was very wealthy and greatly esteemed in royal circles. He was a great scholar in halacha, but also loved agoda. Whenever he spoke in public, he always spoke of agoda rather than of halacha, for he felt it would be more generally understood by the public at large, and therefore be of greater value to them. His lectures, however, were also appreciated by the scholars of halacha who flocked to hear him. In the Tractate Tzeita, there is a story told of Rabbi Avua and Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who both met in a certain town. Rabbi Chiya lectured there on halacha, while Rabbi Avua talked about agoda, and even the scholars came to listen to Rabbi Avua, leaving Rabbi Chiya with a very small audience, which grieved him very much. Rabbi Avua, too, realizing what had happened, was full of sympathy for his friend in his disappointment, and tried to console him by telling him the following parable. There were two men, one trying to make a living by selling precious stones, while the other sold cheap articles needed for a person's everyday needs. Naturally enough, the former, whose wares were very excellent, could find very few customers, while the latter, even though his wares were of a much inferior quality, was besieged by everyone as he catered to their daily requirements. In the same way, said Rav Avuhi, he felt that he could better serve the public at large by teaching them simple things which they could make use of all the time. This did not mean, however, that he did not appreciate nor respect the need of the select few who were Talmidei Chachamim. He was ever ready to do them honor and put in a good word for them. This, then, is the meaning of Rav Avuhi's quotation in the name of Rav Elazar: the fire of Gehenim cannot touch Talmidei Chachamim because they themselves are full of the fire of the Torah, which is called fire, as it is written, at his right hand was a fiery law unto them. Rabbi Yitzchok Shaul further explained that according to the narrative in the Tractate Erevin, a Talmid Chacham is one in whom the Torah permeates his entire being. The story is told there of Beruria, the clever and learned daughter of Rab Chanina ben Taradion, and the wife of Rab Meir, who, noticing a pupil of her husband studying silently, said to him, "This is not the way to study, for it is said that only when the Torah is arucha ushmura, it is arranged and preserved in all one's 248 organs of the body, that only then will it be properly retained. Therefore, when learning the Torah, it must be allowed so that even one's vocal cords and ears can be actively employed. And it's scholars such as these that the fire of Gehenim could not touch." Rish Lakish, however, belonged to an entirely different caste. His name was Rab Shimon ben Lakish. He had a dark past. He had been a member of a band of robbers who operated around the River Jordan, attacking any unwary passerby and robbing them. One day, when Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Jordan, Rish Lakish saw him, pounced upon him with great alacrity, and demanded that he surrender all he had. Rabbi Yochanan was not in the least dismayed. In fact, he looked at him in admiration, and coldly and calmly remarked, "My good fellow, if only you had applied your great strength and energy towards studying the Torah, instead of wasting your gifts in this way, what a splendid scholar you would have made." Rish Lakish was so taken aback at the unexpected turn of events that he found himself listening to Rabbi Yochanan with growing interest. This talk had such a profound impression upon Rish Lakish that he decided to turn over a new leaf, reform his ways, and lead a new life as recommended to him by Rabbi Yochanan. He became Rabbi Yochanan's pupil and applied himself so assiduously to his studies that the results were truly remarkable. He used to ask no less than 24 questions on any contention of his master, and Rabbi Yochanan always gave him 24 satisfactory replies. And this way, the other listeners also benefited. Rish Lakish, coming as he did from a low station in life, always showed his sympathies towards the humble and simple folk. And so when Rabbi Avuhi was eulogizing Talmidei Chachamim, Rish Lakish found a good word to say on behalf of the ordinary man, however humble. Thus, when Rabbi Avuhi said that the fire of Gehenim could not hurt Talmidei Chachamim, Rish Lakish, true to his convictions, added that the simple folk also had their merits, which would preserve them too from the fire of Gehenim. All this was explained by Rabbi Yitzchok Shaul in his Siyum, and all the time more and more people tried to crush themselves into the crowd around the table, pushing as near as possible to make sure they did not miss a word of what he was saying. His two brothers-in-law were still there when Yitzchok Shaul concluded, "If the ordinary Jew finds it difficult to attain a higher spiritual level by his own efforts, then it is the duty of the learned ones to do all in their power to encourage him and to help him towards that end." At this, Rabbi Zalman Meir, the older brother-in-law, could restrain himself no longer, and turning to Mishaleib, said with impatience, "Come, let's leave. How much longer are we to listen to such sermons fit only for women? Let us better go home." But although the younger brother-in-law respected his older brother-in-law for his undoubted learning, he felt that this time he was in the wrong. He only had to look around and see the rapt look of interest on the faces of all the audience to realize that their youngest brother-in-law had something inspiring in him. especially were the faces of the ordinary members of the congregation full of enthusiasm, for up to now they had always been made to feel their lack of education and consequent unworthiness. And now, here was a scholar telling them that they too were important people, and not only giving this as his own opinion, but supporting his arguments with quotations from great sages. No wonder their faces were radiant. Rav Moshe Leib, looking on, was very much impressed. Whoever is out to find the true way of serving his Creator must naturally follow the old rule that from all my teachers I learned wisdom. He must keep his eyes and ears open, ever ready to notice anything new which might teach him something. Thus it was that the house of Eliezer Reuven the Smith was such a revelation to Baruch. The Smith's three sons-in-law represented to Baruch three distinctly different worlds. Yet, while Baruch recognized in the sons-in-law the world of learning, their father-in-law showed Baruch the true honesty and simplicity of the Ish Poshut, the plain Jew. Baruch had learned so much on this particular Erev Pesach at the home of the Smith that he felt himself to be definitely at the crossroads between his Misnagdic and Chassidic way of life. He had much to learn, he felt, from all he had seen in the Brumzel, as well as at the home of Eliezer Reuven, which to him was in the nature of a spiritual laboratory. They were then expecting another guest for Yontif, the Smith's son, Shmuel Nachman, who had been studying at the yeshiva. When Shmuel Nachman arrived early that morning, Baruch made a point of having a talk with him, for it was at his suggestion a couple of years earlier that the Smith, against the opinions of others, had sent his son to study. For you will recall that in the previous installments we told the story how Rav Baruch encouraged Shmuel Nachman and his father to send him off, although Shmuel Nachman had not shown much promise in his studies up till that point. At that time, then, it was true that Shmuel Nachman was a very poor scholar, and the Dayan of the Brumzel, as well as the boy's learned brother-in-law, all agreed that it would be next to useless to send him to a yeshiva and hope for any successful results. In their opinion, he would be better advised to take up some manual labor. Shmuel Nachman was already working at his father's smithy when Baruch saw how unhappy the poor lad was, how he yearned to go to a yeshiva and become a Talmud Chochem. Baruch felt such a keen sympathy for the boy that he persuaded Eliezer Reuven, the smith, to give his son a chance and send him to a yeshiva. The smith was only too happy to find that someone believed in his son's potential and gladly arranged for his son to attend a yeshiva. Now here he was back again, grown up, and what was even of greater importance, he had proved himself capable of becoming something of a scholar. Baruch regarded Shmuel Nachman with great interest and with a sense of personal responsibility towards him. He was amazed at the remarkable change he found in him. Not only did he see that Shmuel Nachum had definite ideas on the way to serve Hashem based on the Musar he had learned, but saw also quite definitely that Shmuel Nachum had made more than ordinary progress in his studies in the comparatively short space of time he had spent at the yeshiva. Baruch was determined to get Shmuel Nachum to tell him how it had all come about, and the story he heard from the lad convinced him that nothing could stand in the way of one who was so resolved to become a scholar come what may. And this is a story that Shmuel Nachum told Baruch. When Shmuel Nachum arrived at the yeshiva in Orsha, he was regarded there as he had been regarded by the Dayan of the Brumzel as something of a dullard. In addition, Shmuel Nachum used to work part-time at a smithy in order to earn his cost of living. So naturally, the prospects of his becoming a scholar did not look very rosy. At first, the dean did not even take him into a regular class, but got one of the teachers to teach him after hours. By that time, the teacher was rather tired and somewhat impatient of his pupil's inability to grasp the lessons quickly.
In consequence, poor Shmuel Nochum received more than a few blows for his so-called stupidity. These lessons used to take place in the Beis HaMedrash, where there sat an old Jew looking on with interest. The name of this old Jew was Gavriel Shloimeh, and he acquired a liking and admiration for this strange lad who seemingly did not mind being knocked about, for he looked as eager as ever to continue with his lessons. One day the old man took Shmuel Nochum aside and asked him why he allowed himself to be so unjustly punished, to which the boy replied that he was very anxious to study Torah and realized how backward he was. Gavriel Shlomo was so impressed with Shmuel Nochum's enthusiasm and thirst for Torah study that he offered to take him in hand and teach him, but only on condition that he kept the fact a secret. Shmuel Nochum was beside himself with joy, and after some length of time, he had made so much progress under the able tuition of the old man that he was accepted as a regular student at the yeshiva. After this, Gavriel Shlomo gave Shmuel Nochum a letter of introduction to the Rav of Dubrovna, recommending that he accept Shmuel Nochum in his yeshiva. And so, on his advice, the latter left Orsha and entered the yeshiva in Dubrovna. And now, who exactly was this old Gavriel Shlomeh? Shmuel Nochum learned some strange things about this remarkable man. Gavriel Shlomeh was born in Orsha, was the son of Aaron Zelik, a rich horse dealer, and at the same time a learned and charitable Jew. And so, naturally, his father tried to make a Torah scholar out of his son, Gavriel Shlomeh. The young scamp refused to comply, however, and despite his good brain, just had no liking for study, but preferred to run about and get into whatever mischief he could. This went on until he was about 15 years old, when his father died. Finding himself relieved of parental control, he became completely wild, associated with the worst elements in the town, and finally became a common thief. He was nicknamed the kleptomaniac, for whenever he was caught in the act of stealing anything, he would say, "It's not my fault if I suffer from kleptomania." It so happened that a distinguished guest arrived in Orsha, and suddenly found that his towels and tefillin were missing. Suspicion soon fell upon Gavriel Shlomeh, and sure enough, the missing items were found in his possession. The Jews of Orsha were so incensed at such a shameless theft from so distinguished a visitor that they were ready to tear the culprit to pieces. The visitor, however, intervened and begged that he be permitted to take the young thief in his care, as he did not wish him to be punished so that any harm should come to him. The people were greatly surprised, but could not refuse him his request, for he had been the injured party after all, and if he wished the matter to be left alone, that was his business. The visitor then began having the serious discussions with Gavriel Shlomeh, and the people wondered what they could be talking. But before they even had a chance to make any investigations, the distinguished visitor had left the town and taken Gavriel Shlomeh with him. Some 25 years later, a fine-looking family settled in Orsha. One day, when the Rav had just finished his drosh in the Beis HaMedrash, this new arrival went up on the bima and asked permission to make an announcement. He told the congregants that he was Gavriel Shlomeh, whom they had known once as the kleptomaniac. He wished it to be known that he was ready and anxious to compensate anyone whom he had at any time robbed, for he wanted to take up his residence in his old hometown, but wanted to begin with a clean bill of health. In addition, he wished to donate a large sum of money for the erection of a shul, Beis HaMedrash, and other public buildings as an indication of his goodwill towards his town folk to whom he had once done wrong. When Gavriel Shlomeh became an old man, he distributed his wealth among charitable institutions and himself took up residence at the Beis HaMedrash, where he sat and studied in peace and contentment. When Shmuel Nochum was in Dubrovna, he learned that the distinguished visitor who had taken the young thief Gavriel Shlomeh under his wings and reformed him so that he became a scholar and righteous man was in fact a mekubal, a mystic. And thus it was that Shmuel Nochum reaped the benefit of learning Torah from the reformed Gavriel Shlomeh in Orsha, followed by a study in ethics and character building from a certain Rabbi Sholem Yechiel of Harki, who it transpired was a close friend of Yitzchok Shaul, Shmuel Nochum's youngest brother-in-law. Sholem Yechiel was also a follower of the great Baal Shem and the new Hasidic way of life, and he inculcated this teaching into Shmuel Nochum. And so there were two Hasidim now in the Smith's household who held Baruch's keen interest. Then something happened on that first Seder night in the Bronzel, which gave Baruch and others very much to think about. But what? Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the next installment.